Welcome to Burning the Ships. I'm your host, Jason Seward, and today I've got a very, very exciting guest for me and for you guys listening, because I would imagine most of you, if not all of you, know who he is or have seen his content on social media. And today I've got Dan Oliver from Dano's Seasoning. So before I get into all of that, let me tell you JJ's joke of the week. If you've been following along, or if maybe this is your first time listening to the podcast, one thing we've started doing is I've asked my son, or actually he asked me, so let me be clear about that, if he could give me a joke to read every episode we do. So I've started implementing that, something fun for us, something fun for him to know that I'm putting into the podcast. I finally got it out of him. If y'all been listening the last several weeks, he has been telling me he's making these jokes up. I was pretty certain he wasn't. Some of them I had heard before, but he finally admitted, that he has a book or some kind of app he's looking at to get them. But nonetheless, it's fun for us to kind of connect with and bond over. So what I've got him doing now is he writes the jokes down and I actually open them in real time as I'm reading them. So here we go with JJ's joke of the week. Okay. What did the mama cow say to the baby cow? It's pasture bedtime. That's JJ's joke of the week. It's a pretty good one. I like that. I hadn't heard that one before. So now on to the episode. I am very excited to have Dano on today. It is, and my excitement goes beyond just the fact that he's such a popular social media figure and his business has absolutely blown up over the last 5 years. And he gets into all that in the episode. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. But it's pretty cool with this podcast. I've talked about it several times before, but I don't just try to reach out to people that have a lot of influence and followers and stuff like that. Early on, I might have been motivated to do that just to kind of pick up the audience for the podcast and expose the podcast to people's audience and stuff like that. But nowadays, I just reach out to people that I think have a good story and I personally want to talk to. So I don't really pay much attention to the downloads and stuff that come with that or how big somebody's audience is. I've had folks that on here that don't even have social media. So, you know, the motivation was just to talk to them and hear their story. Dano is not that. He's got social media and he's got a big following, over 10 million followers across all platforms. But that's not the reason I reached out to him. I could reach out to anybody with that size following. But I reached out to him because a couple months ago I saw a video he posted and I had seen a lot of his videos over the years. I followed him for a long time, but a lot of his videos, most of them are cooking and using his seasoning and promoting that. I've used his seasoning for a couple years now, love everything he's ever put out, and it is a mainstay in our pantry. But I saw a video of him talking about the early days of Dano's, and I hadn't heard his story up to that point. I'd never heard him on a podcast or seen him in an interview or anything like that. I've just seen his cooking videos, the reels and stuff that pop up. But this particular one was a longer form video of him talking about his story, which he will get into in this episode. And as soon as I saw that, I was like, man, I'm gonna take a shot here. I know his social media is probably guarded or has a third party managing it or somebody on his team managing it. So there's a good likelihood that my message would not get through to him, but I gave it a whirl. So I shot him a message on, I believe it was Facebook. And within a couple of days, he responded. And he responded that he would love to come on. And so I sent him the link. And it wasn't long after that, he was scheduled to come on the podcast. So obviously, that was exciting for me because I'm excited to share his story and to get a response or just to break through to somebody that probably gets flooded with not hundreds, but thousands of messages throughout every week. So that was exciting to me. And then a cool story, kind of a coincidental thing. Once we had that interaction, Again, his reels pop up as I'm scrolling quite a bit. I'll see maybe one or two a week. But after we had that interaction, the algorithms or whatever promotes his stuff just flooded my feed. Every time I got on social media, he was there again. Another video. So a video popped up literally the day after we did that interaction and scheduled the podcast and everything of him removing skin from a piece of salmon. I had never seen that. I made a video of me doing that myself. I thought I had discovered something through his video that nobody knew. Found out quickly, a lot of people knew this, and I was really one of the only ones in the dark about this. But it was a cool way to, kind of put, we made the connection through social media, and then I saw one of his reels, and now I've implemented it, and I'm eating salmon like like a bear right now because I now know how to take skin off salmon the very quick and easy way. Now, I know a lot of you are hearing this and rolling your eyes because you think the skin on salmon is the best part. I respectfully disagree. I don't like it. I want it off my salmon. So there's that. So before we get into the interview, I'm going to give Dano a proper introduction and I'm going to read a little bit from his bio and then we'll turn it over and he'll share, his story and stuff like that, which I think all of you will find inspiring, motivating, all the things that come along with it. So Dan Oliver, he's the founder and owner of Dano's Seasoning. He's a native of Louisville, Kentucky. He's known to many as Dano. He's an entrepreneur and the visionary founder of Dano's Seasoning. What began as a dream in his grandmother's kitchen has flourished into a nationwide sensation, with Dano's Seasoning available in over 18,000 retailers across the United States. And I believe that number's up to over 20,000 now and growing. Born in 1981 and raised in Louisville, Kentucky, Dan's journey began in his grandmother's kitchen. Every Sunday, she would invite the family over and cook up delicious fried chicken. Dan noticed the care she put into her ingredients and cooking. The experience instilled a deep appreciation for the power of food to unite people and bring happiness. Dan attended Trinity High School, initially aspiring to be a high school quarterback, and later pursued dreams of becoming a professional pool player. Though life took him on a different path, these aspirations instilled resilience and determination qualities that laid the foundation for his future success. The story of Dano's Seasoning began during his college years, as Dan experimented with seasoning blends while cooking chicken thighs, which planted the seed for what would become Dano's Seasoning in 2015. While working as a bartender and cook, Dan spent years using the recipe. After more than a year perfecting the recipe, designing the logo, and creating the beloved mascot, Little Danny, the first bottle of Dano's was sold in August of 2016. Amid the challenges of the 2020 pandemic, Dan leveraged social media to promote Dano's Seasoning, using TikTok to reach a massive audience. His engaging content helped grow a loyal community of over 10 million followers, known as the Dano's Fanos, who share a passion for bold flavor and inspire others to explore creative, healthy cooking. For Dan, Dano's is more than a business, it's a lifestyle. Whether he's crafting new blends or sharing recipes, Dan remains passionate about changing the way people season their food. When he's not freestyling in the kitchen, you can find him playing golf, fishing, or connecting with fans. His journey is a testament to perseverance, creativity, and a relentless drive to inspire people to enjoy cooking with real, natural flavors, one table at a time. So please welcome in Dano on Burning the Ships. Dano, welcome to Burning the Ships, my man.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited about this.
I am too, man. I've been following along with you since, like we talked about before we started recording, since COVID, and that's kind of when everything popped off for you. But I know there's a lot more to the story than that. But recently, it wasn't until recently I saw a video you posted that kind of told your story. And immediately I was like, I got to get him on here because your story fits the theme of this show, you know, with the burning the ships and no looking back, no plan B. I reached out to you and, you know, I'm very thankful that you responded and agreed to come on. So now we got Dan Oliver. How you doing?
Great, man. I'm glad you reached out. It's, you know, it never gets old to me telling the story. I think that in my early days, it was all about this like vision and this mission that I had. And, you know, now that I've become more successful, you know, a big thing to me is like giving back and telling my story, you know, just being able to tell my story and tell people like, hey, you know, I wasn't cut from the cloth that's supposed to be successful. I just had a drive and determination and no plan B. And I saw my vision and I went all in and I never gave up and I just kept going.
Yeah. And I want to touch on all that. I kind of, you know, when I heard your story and that little video you made, the thing that stood out to me is like, I probably was like many others thinking that in 2020, you start making these videos, it takes off and then boom, you're an overnight success, but it goes years before that. And I found it fascinating kind of the grind and the vision you had years before it popped off. And that just happened to be the thing that popped off. But if it didn't, I feel confident now knowing your story, something would have popped off at some point because you were not going to give up. So let's start back in the early days. So have you always had an entrepreneurial mindset and it just took the right thing and the right time for it to pop? Or is this something that kind of came later in life?
No, it was 100%. I've been a dreamer since day one. Ever since I can remember being a little kid, you know, school was never my thing. I was always struggled in school. I actually got held back in first grade. So I went to first grade twice.
Awesome.
Because like my reading level, you know, they're like, you better hold this kid back a year.
Right.
So I always had, you know, it's funny. My dad told me several years back and he's like, I really think that what I told you when you were an infant, this was when he was building his business and like insurance. And he said, he used to grab me out of my crib and just pick me up. And I would just stare at him. He would talk to me and say like, you know, don't listen to people that say you can't do it. And like, you got to dream big. And so something that he said to me when I was a little baby, because of course I don't remember this, but somehow I kind of do. And I always remember like, my entire life, I was always a dreamer. I was always like, it was hard for me to pay attention in school. It was hard for me to read any books, still hard for me to read any books just because my mind goes elsewhere. I'm thinking about other things and ideas. And so anybody that knows me from before Dano's will tell you that like, oh, I knew he was going to be successful. It just took like him to figure out what it was going to be at. You know what I mean? Because I was always dreaming and talking big ideas.
Yeah. And I can definitely relate to a lot of that in the sense that, I mean, I absolutely hated school. I mean, hated it. And that was tough on my mom. You know, I was raised by a single mom, but that was tough on her because my hate for school caused bad grades. I was just disruptive and all that. But at the same time, I always was dreaming about, you know, what's going to happen with me. Like, I'm not going to conform to the normal culture of get out, go to college, get a job, you know, do all that,
right,
which I ultimately ended up doing. But, you know, that my brain was not that way when I was a kid. And you said something interesting about your dad saying that. A couple thoughts there. Number one, kudos to him for encouraging it, because most parents want their kids to go as conservative as possible, to have the good job, the good benefits, to be in the box, I guess, and to have your dad at such an early age speak that to you is powerful. And it reminds me of kind of similar to, are you a golf fan?
I love golf.
Okay. Have you read the Tiger Woods book? I don't know. Okay. There's a section in there talking about how his dad, when he was an infant, would sit him in a high chair in the garage, and his dad had like a simulator in his garage and would just sit there for hours hitting balls with Tiger just sitting there eating snacks, watching him. And he feels that it ingrained in him that vision of a swing and stuff like that. And then he developed it later in life. So that you telling that story kind of reminded me of So you're the Tiger Woods of seasoning, if you will.
I love that. I've never heard that story. I need to go. I need to go get that audio book.
Yeah. I say I read that book. I listen to it like I do all books because I can't read much of anything. But so cool, man. So your dad, you kind of encouraged that from an early age. But you mentioned you didn't like school. You had to get through school. So kind of how did you work through that with this constant, you know, vision of something bigger, hating school? Where did that take you? Where did that vision take you from there?
Well, let's go back to my high school days. And so I recently was a keynote speaker at some of these guys that just graduated. Maybe they're still trying to figure out what they're going to do, what their path's going to be. And I kind of told the Trinity guys, because Trinity's like a very well-known high school around these parts. And I kind of told them, I said, I might not tell these kids what you want to hear, because I wasn't the one that paid attention. I wasn't the one getting straight A's by any means, barely graduated. Carried a chip on my shoulder towards Trinity for quite some time, because when I was a freshman, I remember I played both ways on the freshman team. At Trinity High School, you can only play on freshman football. It's so big, they don't allow you, no matter how good you are, you can't play the level up. So I was the only kid freshman year that played offense and defense both ways, strong safety and tight end, but I wasn't quick enough to play quarterback. And imagine that. But so anyways, I kind of carried this chip on my shoulder. I ended up quitting my junior year, early on junior year, because basically they wouldn't even look at me to play quarterback. And so I was like, well, if I can't play my position, I'm done with this. And I should have gone back out maybe senior year when they got a new coach in. I didn't. And I kind of like always was a little salty about that. And it's funny, I picked up, I was always a competitor. I always had older brothers, two older brothers, two older stepbrothers. Everything in my life was always competition. So I picked up billiards, and I thought I was going to be a professional pool player.
Okay.
I had no intentions of going and going to college. Didn't even take SAT or ACT. And As soon as it's time to start playing pool, I played my first professional tournament, and literally like 2 days later, I get in a head-on crash, broke my hand, broke this bone, this finger was sticking sideways, and that was all that happened. And it was kind of like, that's a sign. That's a sign that I'm not supposed to be playing pool. Well, shortly thereafter, I went to school with some buddies. They had an opening at Kentucky, and I was like, my buddy was like, you need to get your ass down here. Go to the community college. Like, we got a spot here for you. And so that's what I did. And I really applied myself, because at this point in my life, it was like rock bottom. It was like, I got to do something. I got to figure out what I'm going to do, because I always had these ideas. So I went to the community college, made the dean's list for like 2 years in a row. But then I remember talking to my one brother, and he's like, man, I'm killing it in the insurance business. He's like, you should get back here. Jump into the insurance business. He's like, it's so easy, you'll kill it. And so I came back, got in the insurance business, ended up being, I guess, a great experience in the long run, but it wasn't for me. I wanted to be selling something you can touch and feel, like seasoning or taste.
Yeah.
And not the intangibles. But anyway, so I did insurance for a couple of years. And then I found out real quick that wasn't for me. And then I did manufacturing sales for electronic engineers. So I kind of got to see the world of manufacturing, got to go into any sort. It was kind of like How It's Made. Everybody's seen that TV show. I got to live that. I got to go and talk to all these maintenance managers at all sorts of manufacturers. And so for 5 years, I got to experience this manufacturing equipment and how manufacturing processes are. And so when that fell through, that's when I went into bartending. And then shortly, 5 years of bartending, and then we got into the seasoning.
Okay. So let's unpack that. First of all, the insurance, but you said your dad was in insurance also, or had an agency?
He started in life insurance. Like when I was born is when he started his life insurance. And now he's more financial planner. But that stemmed into the financial planning. And then that's what my brother did. And my other brother, my stepdad was a big financial planner. So like everybody in my family was like, oh, I'm going to be in insurance and financial planning.
Right.
And then, it, you know, I tried it, like I said, for the 2 years and it was like, yeah, that wasn't for me.
Yeah. So I worked for Virginia Farm Bureau for 17 years, and Farm Bureau is real big in Kentucky also. Yep. But, that was, you know, kind of my gig for 17 years before I burned the ships and went all in on real estate. But so I know the insurance world very, very well. And when you describe, you know, selling a product that's not tangible, that was always my struggle. You know, yeah. Like I was good at it. I could sell the idea of you need this product to take care of, you know, whatever risk you have. But I hated the fact I didn't have something to show them tangible, you know, and, yeah. To actually benefit from the product I was selling, something really bad in their life had to happen. And that always, you know, I struggle with that as well,
right.
You know, but so you go from that, I would imagine the manufacturing sales, gig gave you some, probably didn't know it at the time, but probably gave you a good insight onto what you ultimately ended up doing with the seasoning, because you got to be in the weeds and, you know, with all that. And then you go to bartending. When did the seasoning, like, when did that idea come about? Was that years ago, or did it slowly evolve? I mean, I'm curious to know how that evolved.
Sure. So I'll tell you the whole story about how that happened. January 2015, I've been bartending for about 3 years, and that's when the idea hit me. But it was funny because this was like the little bar. It was a pool hall / bar. They had like 12 pool tables in there, so they have pool leagues all the time. Well, that was always my little hangout. And so when I lost the manufacturing job, I knew the manager there. And I was like, man, I'd really like to be a bar back here and like get into bartending. And he's like, oh, I'd let you, but there's no openings. Like it was a small place. They only had a handful of people. And it was like, there wasn't shifts to go around. And so I was like, what about the kitchen? And he's like, you want to work in the kitchen? I was like, I love to cook. And he was like, well, you can start in the kitchen. I was like, cool. When do I start? He's like, come in Monday. So I took a job making $10 an hour. And I just told myself, I'm like, all right, I love to cook for people. I'm just going to do this because I wanted something different. And I'm going to work my way into bartending. So it took about 6 months. But what was cool is when I was working there, you know, like I said, we used to cook and run these specials for the pool leagues. Like it would be every pool table was taken. So it was a big deal from 7 o'clock to 10 o'clock every night. It was pool leagues going on and I would run a special. Well, there were several times where it said herb crusted chicken with mashed potatoes and this and this. It didn't say Dano's herb crusted chicken. It just said herb crusted chicken, but I would literally make my seasoning at home, bring it in a big Ziploc bag, and I would make this herb crusted chicken for people. Never thought to call it Dano's. Never. My ideas were big and beyond making seasoning, right? So finally worked my way into the bartending. And then about 3 years into it, first 3 years, you know, it allowed me to play golf whenever I wanted to golf. It allowed me to do whatever I kind of wanted to do. I just had to work my shifts. And then it was a pretty cool lifestyle. But then after 3 years of doing it, I'm like, I can't do this the rest of my life. I got to get out of here. This is, you know, this is going to be the end of me. Like, it's just too much. And right. So I had already brought this chicken in before and made it for specials. And it wasn't until this one day, it was a Monday, January 2015. So literally a little over 10 years ago. And I remember bringing this chicken in Monday or 5 o'clock. So the shift changed because they're open during the day too, but there's never anybody there at 5 o'clock. Shift changed. There's one guy sitting there and I was like, man, you want some of this chicken I brought in? He was like, yeah. So I gave him a piece of chicken and he took one bite and he's like, this is the best chicken I ever had. Why aren't you selling this? And I was like, Dano's, don't sell the chicken, sell the seasoning. That's literally all I'm doing is putting this seasoning on the chicken. And so
it hit you right then.
Right.
That was the light bulb.
Okay. Aha moment. I had to work, you know, because we stayed up until 4 o'clock in the morning. I remember even trying to get somebody to come in and work for me because I was so eager to get home and start Googling and YouTubing how I'm going to start the seasoning business.
And so I knew it was going to be called Dano's. I knew I had this flavor that was totally unique and unlike anything on the market. It hit me like a ton of bricks. I knew exactly what I was going to do. All these other ideas that I had in my life, and, you know, some of them I actually tried to chase a little bit, spent like $2,000 on a disposable toothbrush. But once I got to the point where I needed like 20,000 more, I'm like, yeah, that ain't what I won't need to be doing. But it was like this. You know, right here, cooking it and for people is my love language. And so it just made all the sense in the world. The name, great name, Dano's, what a great name. And it's like, I need to come up with a logo. My little fisherman guy, call him Little Danny. That's, I pay the guy in the kitchen $100 to draw him up. It was
really,
yeah.
That's awesome, though.
Yeah. So that was my idea, like a Huckleberry Finn character, but I knew I needed somebody to draw it. And not use like clip art from the internet. So literally I had him draw up this state of Kentucky, had some farm animals. It took about 3 weeks or so to get this picture finalized because I had this big vision of the state of Kentucky, little farm animals, little Danny had a chicken and a fishing pole. And once we finally got it, I gave him the $100. I remember it was at the end of the night and all the other bartenders were like laughing at me that I paid him $100 for this drawing. And I'm like, it's my logo. You know what I mean? I wasn't laughing about it. But so anyways, so I registered the business April 13th, 2015. And it's funny because when I got to the end of 2015, I hadn't sold anything. And I remember my CPA, my buddy who was doing my taxes for me, he was like, you owe $175 for this business you started. And I'm like, well, I didn't sell anything. He's like, it doesn't matter. You started a business, you owe $175. And I'm like, okay, next business I start, I won't start it till I'm ready to rock. Right. But so anyways, it took me about a year and 8 months or so. I packaged my first bottles in August 2016. I got a manufacturer's permit at my buddy's restaurant. I would pack up all my supplies, go to his restaurant, unload, blend everything up. It'd take me 8 hours to make 200 bottles start to finish. And then I could go to a flea market or something and sell them really quick. I say flea market. I never did a flea market. It was a little farmer's market. On the weekend, it was like one day on a Saturday, and I'd go there for 4 or 5 hours, and I'd sell the heck out of it. People love the product. We also got into some small little grocery stores called Paul's Fruit Market. And when I started to really, like, sample the product, I started to realize why people weren't buying it. And it's like, okay, it had a pinch of sugar in it. Literally didn't have to put sugar on the nutrition panel, but it was in the ingredients at the very last thing because it was a pinch, because that's how I made my recipe, with a pinch. And so I literally put it in there because it was like, that's how I made it. Well, then I was like, well, I need to take that out. And I need to lean into this low sodium because that's like how I can make myself different. So I always marketed like it's made with the right amount of salt, no sugar, no chemicals. Why aren't the big companies making seasoning like this? Also, why you can use more. And, you know, that keeps them coming back, the consumption rate. But that's actually like, it's not a gimmick. It's how you use the product because it's not packed full of salt. Like, you buy the other, like, Cajun seasonings or whatever, they're 300 milligrams plus of sodium. Well, if you season it like I do, well, you're not going to want to eat that chicken or whatever it is because it's just going to be way too salty.
Right. And you're appealing to it's a big demand for, like, and this is a good thing, but culturally we are all becoming more health conscious and stuff like that. So every diet or anything's calling for a low sodium type of seasoning, and you're filling that demand. So I would imagine that opened up a big market for you as well.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's when so at this point I've repackaged the product. I was like, pump the brakes. I'm not going to sell another bottle of Dano's other than where it's at. I'll keep them stocked till I get the new product. And let me see here. I'm going to grab a bottle real quick. So this was the original bottle.
Okay.
Of course, it was green and red. Yeah. I'll grab the red. So this is what I moved to. So this was the original, and this is what it moved to. And basically, I was like, all right, I need to highlight these value props, and I needed to get to a $5 price point. So that's what I did. And then once I did that, that was June 1st, 2017. And I remember my dad, he always used to be like, you need to go do one of these big flea markets. And I'm like, I am when I'm ready. Like, that's my goal, is when I get to the point to where I'm ready and I got this new package, I'm going to the flea market. And so this was 4th of July flea market. There's this, the company called Stewart's Promotion here in Louisville. And they have like
Stewart's. Oh, okay, gotcha.
And they have like 5 or 6 of these every year. And they're like 4-day flea markets. And at least like 10,000 people are coming out there. Like, they're big. They're a big deal. It's not a little farmer's market. And so my goal was to sell $1,000. And I ended up selling like almost 4,000. It was like $3,700. Mm-hmm. And I remember after that was over, and I remember sitting in the parking lot of Kroger and talking to my dad on the phone. I was like, yeah, I did $3,700. I was like, I'm never going to work for anybody ever again. I was like, this is it. Now I know what I need to do. I just need to find more big flea markets like this. Flea markets, state fair, what have you. And so...
Can I pause you for 1 second?
Yeah.
I got one question.
Sure.
Right. So I'm trying to follow the timeline here. So were you still working at the bar while the idea hit you January 2015?
Yeah.
You start selling, making it, you pump the brakes, you kind of rebranded it.
Yeah.
Now you're in summer of 2017. Did you work at the bar that whole time?
Yep.
Okay.
All the way up until basically that first flea market.
Okay.
And once I had that success, it was like, okay, you know, with the margin that I had, which I didn't really understand what margins were then.
Yeah.
But like, you know, selling $3,700, there's a good chunk of change to live off of. But I also knew I was trying to grow a business. So I wasn't just like, okay, I can take this money and go spend it. It was like reinvest, buy more product. And so, yeah, that was 2017. And I was like, all right, find more flea markets. So then I just started using Google, and like I traveled, you know, to Tennessee to go to one of their flea markets, and it wasn't as good, but it was still like, you know, doing $2,000 or $3,000 is good to me. So it beats bartending, right?
Right.
So it was literally for the next 3 years of my life was going to these festivals, flea markets, anywhere I could be on the weekend, putting my, you know, cooking some chicken and sampling it out. I knew that I could just keep building my business. And that's what I did. So, you know, $40,000 in 2017 is what I did. And then it was $110,000 in 18. And then it was like $210,000 in 2019. And so I kept building my business. I was doubling my sales each year. And, you know, people love the product. When I would see people that have seen me before, they're like, oh, we use this on everything. And like, I just knew I had something special that I could never give up on. I always tell people this. I started the business because of the flavor. And then it just turned out it happened to be healthy. That wasn't by design.
Right.
And then I leaned into it. Like, I identified that and I leaned into it. And then the third thing was that the first state fair I did right after that first flea market, I remember being out there giving a sample, and this lady was taking the sample and she was like, this is dang good. And it went right over my head. I didn't even get it. I was like, right. No sugar, no chemicals, made waste is supposed to be made. And she's like, no, 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 honey. And she's pointing at Dan O's sign. She's like, dang good. And I was like, whoa.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, I was like, dang good. And I remember I was standing there with a buddy, and I was like, you know, he might have been like, Dan O'Mai, you don't know till you Dan O. And it just started flowing out. And I was like, wow, man. Like, to me, because I'm such like, you know, visionary, had this vision, and it's like how everything just kind of like the pieces of the puzzle just like fell into place, like with the being healthy, the fun of selling the product to people, saying Dan O'Mai, you don't know till you Dan O, just makes it fun. And it was like, I'll never give up on this. Like, I knew what I was called to do, like what I was meant to be here to do, was to create this big seasoning company.
Right.
And so,
so
yeah,
No, go ahead. Go ahead. I'll keep rolling with the story. I'm writing down questions as you go.
Sure. Well, I was just going to jump to 2020.
Yeah.
That's when it took off and went to the next level. But I also didn't know that. You know, at the beginning of this podcast, you said something, you know, we don't all, you know, I probably would have figured it out if it wasn't for TikTok. It was just a matter of time before I found the right opportunity. You know, life sometimes is about opportunities, and you may not always see everything as an opportunity at the time, even though it's the opportunity that you needed. And so I remember being in Michigan, and I was an hour away from this show, and it got canceled, and I had to drive all the way home, and I was listening to the talk radio the whole time and just listening to how nothing's ever going to be the same. This is changing everything forever. And I listened to Gary Vaynerchuk, and I remember he was on there saying, if you're a brand right now, you need to be on TikTok, TikTok, TikTok. And I was already on TikTok, but I only had like 5,000 followers, maybe. I remember I was around 24,000 total followers, and Facebook was my biggest at like 12,000. And so
now, were you prior to that, were you actively trying, like as you went out to shows and stuff, were you also trying to get people to follow you?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, was that a part of your marketing? Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I was, yep. Man, it's funny because you go back to like the years of me working in that, insurance and the manufacturing and the bartending, I don't have any photos from my life. Like the only photos you have of me from that point in my life would have been like a family function or something where mom's like, get this picture. Because I literally was like, I didn't document my life. I wasn't on social media. You know, all my other friends were on Facebook. I had an account, but I'd look at it once a week. And so when I started the business going back to 2017, I started making videos. I was like, all right, this is what you chose to do, so I'm going to start making videos. I just need to get comfortable with that. And so that's what I did. And so I say I had 24,000 followers at the time, and that was just from, you know, over the 3-4 years, me making videos, being at a fair, like, oh, we're out here at the state fair, come see us. So that's when I really started to document my life, my journey, what I'm doing with Dano's. And so now let's get into the goodies. So COVID hits, and I remember driving home. I was like, TikTok, TikTok, TikTok. That's what I got to do. And so I remember it was about a week and a half in, somebody introduced me to this guy here in town. He said, you need to talk to this marketing guy. He's got a large marketing company, and he's the type of guy that'll do work for a percentage of revenue. I was like, well, that's the guy I need. Somebody that's not just going to take $3,000 from me, but earn it. Yeah. And so when we met, he had 16 people at the time. And our original agreement was a $2,000 a month retainer. And he was going to get 10% of revenue, whatever he built. Right. Mm-hmm. And so to him, it seemed like I had all this low hanging fruit. Because I didn't know how to do all the Facebook ads and all this stuff. I used to remember throwing money at it, and it was just like money spent, got nothing in return. Right. And so we made this partnership. And next thing you know, the same day, March 18th, 2020, was the same day I made my first viral video. And it was a crab cake video. And I was discouraged, and I almost wasn't going to make it, but I pulled my phone out anyways, and I made it in just like 10 minutes and posted it to the internet. And all of a sudden it goes viral. You know, viral to me at that time was like 500,000 views. But guess what? Instead of doing $200 a day in sales, all of a sudden I did $800. All the comments were like, where's the Obey? Dano's is trash. Nobody likes you in Maryland. Like all this like negative stuff. And I was just like, you don't know T Dano. You don't know T Dano. Just
perfect.
Replying to all these comments. Well, next thing you know, the next day it was like $1,000 in sales. And then I had another viral video, and it was like $2,000, and never went back. Never did it go like that for like the first 2 years. It was like this. Like if we did $10,000 this day, it was $10,100 the next day. It was just crazy. And
so that had to be an immediate shift then. I mean you go viral and now your sales are skyrocketing. Now you're kind of unplanned, but you're probably graduating from the flea markets every weekend to like, okay, let's lean into this. So yeah, I'm ready to be arrested.
And flea markets were non-existent at this point.
Yeah.
So
that's right.
Yeah, you know, he had the marketing company. Yeah, I couldn't go back to bartending either. So there was no plan B. It was all in on social media. Like, that was the way I was going to make it. That was my burning the ship. Like, it was social media.
Yeah.
And so we leaned, let's just say this. We had that marketing agreement for about a month. By March 28th, we had made a full partnership agreement because I literally was in my house. I mean, I'll show you right now. This is where I make my videos. This is my little kitchen area. This is where I used to make all the original videos, was right here. This was my fulfillment center, which is now all kitchen supplies.
Yeah.
But that was my fulfillment center. This is where we do our, take the camera shots, the photos of food. And so now this is where we do all our production for food. But it used to be, that was my distribution center. I had Danos and packing peanuts and tape and boxes everywhere. And so we made an agreement because I mean, it was just crazy. We needed a fulfillment center. We needed to like ramp up manufacturing. Keep in mind, it's the middle of COVID. We had to take every dollar that we were bringing in and putting it into buying plastic and buying caps. And we were buying caps, loading up on them for a year because we didn't know what was going to happen. We didn't know what our trajectory was with sales, you know, because it just kept getting better and better. And it's like, well, let's take this $50,000, buy $50,000 worth of bottles, you know.
Yeah.
Because we just didn't know. And plus, it used to take me 3 weeks to 4 weeks to go from like, I need to make 10 pallets of product. And now all of a sudden it went to like 3 to 4 months. There was one point to where it took like 6 months to get bottles. So somehow, one way or another, we never ran out of product. It was just original and spicy, the green and the red. That's how it all started. You know, I had the original flavor and I wanted to make a spicy version of it. And so, you know, we made this basically agreement to go in business together. And the agreement was to change the world. You know, to me, you know, one thing he'll tell you is like when, you know, he was used to making business deals with other people. And he said, the one thing that was special about me is it wasn't about money. It was about getting this product out there and changing the world and showing people that there's a better product for you. And so we were just motivated to do that. And, you know, I set this up. From the beginning, people ask me all the time, they're like, you could never imagine getting this big. And I'm like, well, actually, like, my vision from the beginning was to be really big. And so I kind of like the reason I went from this to this was for retail, to be in retail. So our goals changed from, our goal was to get into retail. And it wasn't until 2022, like April 2022, that we went nationwide in Walmart and Kroger at the same time. And so what we did in that time of like 2020 and 2021 is we were starting to build, how are we going to get this into these stores? Well, we got to build a pitch deck that looks good, that tells them that we need this product. So we are number one on Amazon. We started to sponsor NASCAR. We sponsored a racer for like $20,000, which we couldn't afford, but we're like, we're going to do it because we're going to make this look way bigger than what it is.
I love
it. And we're going to still put that in our pitch deck to Walmart and Kroger and be like, look what we're doing. Yeah. You know what I mean? So we made ourselves bigger than what we were by doing some of these sponsorships. Super Bowl commercial, we spent $20,000 on. We couldn't afford that at the time, but it was worth every penny because we said we had a Super Bowl commercial. It's just regional.
Was that a local? Okay, yeah. I was going to say $20,000. That barely gets you a second. Hey,
15 right. Seconds, $20,000, you can get a local commercial.
I love it.
Yeah.
But y'all had a Super Bowl commercial.
Correct.
So you could put that on your pitch deck.
Right.
Got it.
And we actually, the next year, we aired one in Nashville, and that was like $40,000 for 15 seconds. But there's a lot of big people in Nashville, and they got national coverage. They thought it was a national commercial. So when they talked about it in their podcast, they talked about it like it was a national commercial, not knowing that it was just us placing a regional ad.
Right.
But that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But so anyways, so we did all this work of like, hey, look at what we're doing in sales. People want this product. And I remember at the time, I got interesting when the first investor came in. So we're selling ourselves to Walmart and Kroger. And I remember our broker said, how many regions of Kroger do y'all want to go in? Like, do you want the Southeast? And we're like, no, we want them all. And he's like, you sure? He's like, well, ask for it. And we're like, yes. Like, people want our product everywhere. Look at the stats. Look at our website. People from everywhere are buying it. Same thing with Walmart. They offered us like 2,700 stores. And we're like, well, we'll give you this if you put us in all. We did that. So we went Walmart and Kroger at the same time. So, you know, to go in these stores, it takes like 8 months of planning. They'll take you in and they'll say yes in August, but you don't go in until like April or May. And so that we had all this time to plan. Well, this is when we needed money. So my first investor was Eric Wood. He's the, he played for the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah.
He's actually their announcer. And he told me, you know, his advisor, who we met with also, he said, you know, he told me, no, don't do it. It was too risky. He said, but what I saw in you, he said, he called it the Kobe Bryant effect, that you only invest in people that are all in. There's no plan B.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's what I saw in you, that you didn't have a plan B, that there was, you know, it was Dano's or bust. And he's like, that's what I saw in Dano's and saw in you. And so, like, I made the investment without the approval of my financial advisor. And so I'd say it was a pretty good investment for him. And, you know,
yeah.
Flash forward. And, you know, he came in for a chunk of money. And then it wasn't just 3 months later. We're like, wow, we really need a lot more money. You know, this going in nationwide, Walmart and Kroger, this is what it really looks like. So we had to go raise like another $3 million. And, but that gave us the money that we needed to fund inventory. And then we go in 2022, all of a sudden, by the end of 2022, we were in 10,000 stores. So literally 2020, when TikTok happened, we're in 200 stores. 10,000 by the end of 2022. And now it's like, if you flash forward to right now, we're getting ready to be in over 20,000 because we're going into Target right now.
Really? Okay. That, man, I've got so many questions. you talked about selling this vision to investors. I love how you touched on how you kind of had to posture up bigger than you were at the time because you believed so much into where it was going to go. So I love that side of it. But with that, when you answered Kroger, we want all of them. We want all the stores. Walmart, we want them all. We don't just want a region. We want them all. That is a kind of a ready, fire, aim mentality, right? And so when you say that and they accept, was it like an oh shit moment where you've got to, now we've got to deliver on this? And that's where I guess your back was against the wall to go raise the capital to fulfill the orders, right? I mean, is that kind of what y'all went through?
Pretty much. It was strike while the iron's hot. We might never have this opportunity to do this again.
Yeah.
You know, what if we go in and it doesn't work out the way we expect, then maybe they won't put us in the rest of the stores. So it was like strike while the iron's hot. And that was myself and my partners, like, we think very much alike. So we were like, let's go all in. Like, let's push in the chips.
Yeah, I love that mentality. I do have to ask, so you were doing the flea market thing, and then, you know, COVID, the TikTok pops off, everything goes from there. But, and you've kind of alluded to it in your story, you never had any formal business training, entrepreneurial training. Did you have any mentors along the way to help you understand how to put together a P&L and how to analyze, you know, projections and stuff like that? Or were you just literally winging it as you went?
I'll say this. Some people ask me, like, what's one bit of advice you can give to people? And it's like, learn how to be resourceful and figure things out. That's what I'm good at. I can figure anything out. Like I know how to hustle. I can figure things out. I got a lot of common sense. I got a lot of street smarts. But I will tell you, this was when I had this product. I was at Paul's Fruit Market, and a guy came in. I believe his name was Tom King, I want to say. And I haven't talked to him since. Mm-hmm. And he started asking me questions about my product and when you start, why'd you start? And, you know, he's like, when are you doing your next little setup like this? And I was like, well, I'll actually be at LA Fitness, the gym, tomorrow. And he's like, what time? I told him. And he's like, you mind if I come see you again? And I'm like, that's totally fine. Sure enough, this guy comes walking in and he's like, hey, he's like, I just want you to know. He's like, I admire the fact that you like started this business and you're putting yourself out there and you're taking a risk. But he said, I asked you a couple questions yesterday and I could tell he needed some help. So he said, I don't want you to think that, like, I'm going to come back and never ask you for money. He said, you'll probably never hear from me again in your life. He said, I just felt like I could help you with something. And he had this one piece of paper, notebook paper, front and back, all filled out with, like, break-even strategy, margins, this, that, and the other. I remember one thing he told me, and I'll never forget this. He said, the one question I asked you where I asked you, how much margin do you make? And you said 400-something%. He said, I knew you needed help. He said, because there's only one way to make even 100% margin, and that's only if you got something free. Right. And so he's like, when you said you had 400% margin, I knew you needed help.
I love it.
And so he was like, you need to learn the difference between margins and markups. He says, no business operates off markups. You have to learn what margins are. And he had this whole paper front and back. I save everything, man. I save all my little knickknacks from the past. And that actually got eaten by a dog, believe it or not.
Oh, no, man, that's awesome. Totally, I mean, that's not great. Totally, that would have been awesome.
Yeah, like there was no saving it. It was, but I remember like looking at that piece of paper for years and, yeah, but it's gone.
Yeah. Well, that is, you know, I love, and I think, so I'm in the real estate industry. That's, you know, we've got a couple different businesses within that. But there's a pretty like profound common denominator across industries that you see with visionaries, right? The folks that have the idea and then go. And that is, you just nailed it. I'm so glad you answered it that way, that they are all resourceful. They may not have like 99% of the things that need to be figured out. They may not have the answers, but they are resourceful enough to connect with the right people that have the answers. And then as they grow, they delegate to those people and give trust to them while they continue seeing things and coming up with ideas. And you are a great example of that, because you're just idea after idea. It sticks. Now you got to pivot. You got to pivot again. You got to do all these things, and you just make it happen through resourcefulness and grit and all that stuff. And that, like, I had, I interviewed John Hewitt a couple months ago. He's the CEO of Liberty Tax and Jackson Hewitt Tax. And he said, give me, like, as he was building his business, if I had the option of 100 people that are geniuses, they're just badass geniuses, engineers, whatever you call it, or 100 people with fantastic attitude and grit, but no skill sets, give me the people with attitude and grit, because I can train them how to do a job. And it seems like you approach it with that same mentality, you know, from a culture standpoint. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. For sure. Yeah. You know, entrepreneur mindset, man, just learn how to figure things out and how to make things make sense. I remember early on, I mean, this was, you know, I said I had the aha in 2015. Well, I remember in like 2014, somebody introduced me to The Secret. And it was all about manifestation and visualization. And I remember there's one part of The Secret, because I had the audio book, and there's one part to it that I'll never forget. And the lady was like, you know, you have the vision to do something, and like, as long as you're like on the path of doing it, the people are going to come into your lives at the right times. And that I couldn't be a bigger, like, testament example of that. Like, cause I knew how to take this business. I call it Rob Peter to pay Paul. When I needed money out of the bank, I took it. And then I just figured out how to get more in there. I always joke around, but maybe not a joke. Maybe it will happen one day, but I say I might write a book called 100 Overdrafts Later. But
love it.
I know what it feels like to be overdraft all the time and overdrawn. But the right people at the right time, I got from A to B, right? I did all the flea markets and the festivals and got to this TikTok point, and then things started to explode. TikTok gave me the eyeballs that I needed, this right partner. Like, I didn't have to go talk to 5 different marketing companies. It was like, this is the guy. Like, I'd talked to marketing companies before, and I was like, where has he been the whole time? Like, this is my guy. And so it was like one thing after another, just the pieces just fell into the right spots. And now, you know, we're looking to raise money again, and it's like these people that are just coming out of nowhere almost is like they're set for a reason. It's like this, you know, this vision and this mission in the business is like just getting bigger. And like, the bigger you get, the more like influential and like more solid the people that come into the business. It's just happening.
No doubt about it. And you, I mean, with it, as the visionary, that's gotta be satisfying to see it all come together. Right. You know, cause you probably had, I have no doubt you had a lot of people early on, like, what is he doing? You know, like, what is this all about? You know,
and especially early on.
Yeah. And, you know, and you being competitive, I would imagine that's a driver as well.
Yeah.
But to see it all come to fruition, I love hearing stories like this. Let me ask one question before I ask this. When you make a lot of videos, and this is just a curious question, make a lot of cooking videos, who eats all the food?
Well, I do. Whoever's filming, there's always right. 3 of us here. So there's always a camera person, the editor, and then myself. And a lot of times, like, if I'm making something big, I'll invite other people over.
Yeah.
But what's cool is all this time, I mean, 10 years, I've been right here in this house, right?
Crazy.
Like, when COVID happened, I knocked down this wall over here, got rid of my kitchen table, brought in my little fold-up table, and I was like, I'm bringing the show to the internet, right?
Yeah.
So, the cool thing is we're now building our new office. Like, this is a brand new office that we literally, like, we put up the walls and everything. Like, we built this place, basically.
Right.
It was already built, but we're building out the inside, and I'm going to have a giant studio inside with a prep kitchen, the studio, a little space where we could even have 10, 20 people like watch me cook.
Yeah.
So here in the next, probably be done for sure in the next 3 months. And this is going to be super exciting because I guess one of the problems that I've always had to kind of deal with is we've always had our office over there and I'm always over here because we got to make so much content. Now I'm going to get to be a part of the culture, a part of the office, and like, I'll actually be there now.
Right.
So it's going to be.
No, that, yeah, that's fantastic.
Dantastic.
Dantastic, sorry. As far as, so the food, but where do you get the ideas? Like, you've got to constantly come up with content. Where, you know, because it's all, I don't know how many of your reels are saved on my phone that I haven't tried yet, but I like every one of them looks fantastic. So where do you get these ideas from?
Man, a lot of times every Monday morning we have a social media content strategy meeting where we basically go over what we posted last week, what did well, what are other creators doing, if there's any trends we need to be aware of, how many film days do we have this week, what do we need to film? You know, now that we have 12 flavors, I'll never run out of recipes. There was a time in 2020 before Chipotle ever came and it was still just original and spicy that I was like, I need a new product because I'm running out of things to make. Now that I have 12, I'll never run out. I mean, they come pretty easy. I mean, how many different ways can you make chicken thighs? Right. You know what I mean? How many different ways, how many different topping combinations can you put on a pizza? Like, so there's a couple big creators that I watch, like Sonny, that dude can cook. He's an awesome chef. So I'm not a chef. So when I actually want to see, like, okay, let's just say chicken piccata. Well, I'm not a trained chef. So if I want to make chicken piccata, I'll go watch one of these chefs that I know. I'll go type in, Sonny, that dude can cook chicken piccata. And if he made chicken piccata, I'll watch that video and I'll be like, all right, I'll make that. I'll just put some Danos in it.
Love it.
You know what I mean? So I kind of just like, I'm good at like being able to take, I'm resourceful, right? I can figure it out. Get me led in the right direction and then I'll put the Danos twist on it from there.
Yeah, I like that. I used some of the green top and is it the Primo, the black? I mixed it last night and put it on a venison roast. It was fantastic.
But the Primo, the silver?
Fantastic. Yeah, that's it. That's silver top. Yeah. There you go. All right. So now, I mean, you just said earlier that y'all are getting ready to go into 20,000+ stores, right? And you're still, you know, producing the product and everything's going great there. But I don't even have to ask you this. I know that your vision now, it evolves and it goes beyond this. So what is the next step? Is there going to be like co-branding with different companies to implement your seasoning into their brand? Is any of that on the horizon?
Yes, there's actually quite a bit of that. We have some Danos burger patties that are coming out in Walmart that we did with a brand partnership with the company. And that'll be coming out in the next month. So might only even be a few weeks away. I think it's April, in the middle of March. So that'll be coming out. And of course, we want to talk to some other large brands about doing some collaborations. The one big thing that's really a focus to us is to get our price down. So, you know, we would love, the one big complaint that we always get is that we're too expensive. I understand that. I mean, to some places we're $7 and $8 for a seasoning. We get that, but we're also not the large McCormick of the world. We're not manufacturing it. We're trying to, if I could sell it for a dollar, we would.
Yeah.
So our big thing right now is we're trying to figure out like, how can we get cheaper on the shelves for our customers to where, it hurts me when people won't try the product because it's $7 or $8 somewhere. It's like, man, if we could just get to like this, like $6 price point, like we could win and like be number one. Because I want to be number one. We want to be the number one seasoning out there.
Yeah.
And it's not just the sake of like, we want to be number one. It's like, because we feel that we have the best product. Like who else is doing it? Like how we're doing it? Nobody.
Right.
Making sure it's the ingredients and whatnot.
You did a very good job walking us through the timeline. And I just want to hammer on this point. I mean, here we are in 2025. The idea happened in January of 2015. So we're over 10 years from the idea happening. This is not an overnight success.
Definitely.
You grinded your way through it. And I just want to hammer on that point because I see it a lot, unfortunately, where folks, they'll grind away for a year, 2 years, 3 years, and they'll give up on that vision because it's just not growing. And how many would-be millionaire and billionaires quit a month before COVID happened or a month before something popped off that could have done that hockey stick growth and they never realized it because they gave up on that vision. And you're a great testament to you grinded it out literally for 5 years trying to build this thing and you weren't making a ton of money doing it. And then you never gave up on it. And it took off. And I like you combine grit and that unwillingness to give up and you're resourceful and all that. If you don't give up, whatever you have is going to take off eventually. Like if it's a solid product.
Gotta right? have a good product. Gotta have a right, good product.
Exactly. Yeah, that.
I mean, I guess you could go forever if your product's not great. I mean, hopefully you figure it out.
Hopefully somebody slaps you upside the head at some point if it was not a. You there?
I'm sorry. I was trying to put it on low battery mode because I think I only got like 7% left.
All right. Well, we'll start wrapping it up now. But Dan, as far as, I mean, obviously you've gotten to where you are now, you've got an organization now, right? You've got folks in the right places to run the right departments and things like that. Has that, you know, kind of realizing the vision and I know it changes over time, but has that now reached a point where you can take a breath and look back and say, I'm proud of this and take some days to golf and things like that? Have you realized that success yet?
No.
Okay.
I play less golf now than I ever have.
Right.
Yeah. When I was bartending, I was playing 3 days a week. Now that I got a busy, successful business, I golf like once every 2 weeks if I'm lucky.
Right.
I do go out and practice maybe 3 times a week because I can spend an hour on the range. It's just hard to find 4 or 5 hours.
Yep. I get it. Yeah. My business partner and I just joined a local country club this year. The only reason I did it was if I'm paying to be a part of that, it's going to force me to go out and get my money's worth, you know,
right.
and play some golf. And I also justify it for networking and stuff like that. So, but yeah, man. Well, Dan, I really, really can't thank you enough for this. I know, you know, as you mentioned, you're, you know, a very busy man and you got a lot going on, and to take time and share your story with me and my audience, it's inspiring. I hope it inspires some folks to just keep going and keep trying and things like that. And you know, you're the perfect example of no plan B. You just dove all into this and here you are. Right. And, got to have the good product, got to have the good vision, got to have the resourcefulness. And you're a good testament for that. So with all that said, do you have anything else from an advice standpoint or an inspiration standpoint you want to leave the folks with?
Man, you know, like we said earlier, be resourceful. Learn how to figure things out. Make sure you have a good product. Believe in what you're doing. Treat people right, you know, because nobody wants to work with a jerk. And
yeah, I see.
Right? And so, man, there's so many things I could say. Just be resourceful, learn how to figure things out, be nice to people, and, you know, put others first. And
yep. Well said. Well, I appreciate you, man. Again, can't thank you enough. And, you know, I hope that, we're going to drop all of your links and, you know, a lot of folks already follow you, obviously, but, links to your website and where they can order and your social media and everything. We'll drop that in the show notes, Dan. And, again, I appreciate you taking the time and joining us on Burning the Ships.
That's right, baby. Thank you, man. It's been a pleasure.
Yep. All right. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Burning the Ships. I want to give a special thanks to our sponsor, 608B Capital, helping real estate investors secure fast, reliable funding to fuel their boldest moves. If you're ready to take your investing to the next level, visit 608bcapital.com to learn more. If you found value in today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast. Your feedback not only helps us improve, but it also helps us reach more people who are ready to burn the ships and commit fully to their goals. And don't forget to share the episode with someone who needs that extra push to take bold action. I'll leave you with this. Burning the ships isn't just about removing the option to retreat. It's about unlocking the courage to charge forward. No matter the odds, the past is behind you and the future is yours to conquer. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time on Burning the Ships.